tasty and traditional like a vegan sausage roll. It's the FA Cup third round with top sides that look the same but are filled with unexpected ingredients and plenty of upsets. We round up all the weekend's drama, shocks and surprises from Newport to Oldham, red faces for some, friction burn faces for others. Plus Chelsea, as they wave goodbye to Cesc like the parents of a newborn, we salute the Fab One. Or are we just saying, hurry up and take the picture? And we look forward to the Blues League Cup semi-final with Spurs. It's the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello, listener. Thanks so much for joining us for this roundup of the FA Cup third round and more. Here for your oral pleasure, we have Michael Cox.
Hi, James.
Hi, Michael. Daniel Storey, who was at Woking this weekend.
I was. Good morning.
We'll get back to that match later on. Woking, Watford, of course. And also here, although he might be called out literally any second because of a happy event, it's Jack Lang. Jack, this is tremendous news.
Hi, James. Yes, due to have a baby any day now.
All right, lovely. Well, thanks for being with us. FA Cup third round, then it began Friday evening with Spurs winning 7-0 at Tranmere. It'll finish this Monday evening, Liverpool at Molyneux taking on Wolves. In the meantime, lots has happened. The headlines, one non-league side is through. That's Barnet, who beat Sheffield United. There were bona fide upsets elsewhere, as Newport, 13th in League Two, did Leicester, 73 places above them. Oldham came from behind at Craven Cottage to win at Fulham. And Gillingham did Cardiff. Five Premier League sides are now out. That's Bournemouth, Fulham, Cardiff, Huddersfield and Leicester. And of course, one more will follow this evening. And Premier League teams made an average of just under 8 changes to their starting lineups for the weekend's action. Watford were the most with 11. Curiously, while most teams got stick for changing players, one team got into trouble for putting on one of their big stars, Harry Kane, who everyone was very upset when Pochettino brought him on at Tranmere, but a lovely explanation. Paul McIntosh says, two questions for me. Is Saturday's action proof that the FA Cup third round has lost all its magic? And secondly, is Sunday's action proof that the magic of the FA Cup third round is alive and well? Jack?
I think that's a fair assessment. Saturday, in terms of the TV games at least, was, I thought, fairly drab. The Manchester United-Reading game was a good excuse for an afternoon nap, I would say. And Blackpool-Arsenal, perhaps a touch more interesting. A lot of that due to the circumstances surrounding the game, the Blackpool protests, the fans sitting on the bus. Thought that was a nice story.
What did the fans do on the bus? I missed that.
It just sat on the Arsenal team bus before it could leave from the hotel to the stadium. So Arsenal had to quickly arrange.
So the Blackpool fans got onto the Arsenal bus?
Just a single fan, yes.
Oh, just one?
Yeah, and just sat there in silent protest.
When you say on the bus, you mean in a seat? Or
no,
like on top of the bus?
On top of the bus.
I missed this, sorry.
You know, of all the types of protest that fans try over the years, I thought that was quite a novel one.
That is a novel one.
It's funny because you usually celebrate a cup win with an open-top bus parade. So,
yeah.
Bookends that nicely.
Irony. Ed Quoth the Raven says, which surprise underdog victory did the panel enjoy most? He proffers Barnet, Newport County, Oldham Athletic, or Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace. Yeah. Oh, I see what you've done there, Ed. Michael.
I really like the Newport one against Leicester, partly because it was on television and because it was a kind of unlikely way for them to win because they went ahead, hanging on for long periods, and he thought as soon as Leicester got the equaliser, you know, they're probably going to push on and score. And then Newport went down the other end and scored. It was a really strange handball by Mark Albrighton. I quite like the fact he just realised what he'd done rather than complaining about the decision. It was a bizarre incident. But yeah, I thought that was a really good performance. They rode their luck. I mean, you know, the funny thing about these underdog victories these days is you can kind of compare it with the expected goals figures afterwards. And it was why football produces upsets, because Leicester's created so many more chances. They should have won the game comfortably. And yet that's football. You can have two chances and score two goals, get some blocks in at the other end. But yeah, I thought that was a really good game.
Right. Newport, who are 13th currently in League Two, had failed to win their previous five league games, but against a pretty weakened Leicester team, all sorts of players left behind. Christian Fuchs made the journey, of course, with hilarious consequences when Newport prepared their team sheet.
Leicester did make a lot of changes, and as you say, lots of Premier League teams made around 7 or 8 changes. But Premier League teams have big squads now. One of the results of bigger transfer budgets is that managers don't like to be surprised with injury crises, so they have these huge squads, and the FA Cup obviously is a good time to roll them out. That's no excuse, though. Just because a Leicester make eight changes. I think they probably still had, I'm not sure, but I'm going to guess seven or eight internationals in that team. They should still be good enough to beat Newport. It doesn't say much for the professionalism of those players, that, especially at the start of a transfer window, when players like Rashid Ghazal and Kelechi Iheanacho, who have got points to prove and yet were pretty useless against League Two opposition. It's not an excuse making changes at all.
Excellent work, though, from Mickey Flynn, whose impact at the club. I mentioned the recent results haven't been great, but by and large, he's totally turned things around there. And into the hat they go for the fourth round, Jack. How about Fulham Oldham?
Yeah, there's something nice about it involving a comeback as well. So obviously, you know, a few of these upsets are teams taking a lead and just clinging on for dear life. But the fact that Oldham were able to react to Fulham taking the lead obviously rode their luck a bit. More penalty woe for Fulham. So Mitrovic came on just to take the penalty, basically, and managed to miss.
Which, I mean, it wasn't a penalty anyway, was it?
No, Tom Kearney did a... it was a dive. He dived. And
then they sent that to VAR, and then they said, yeah, we think it's a penalty as well, which was surprising. Mm. And meanwhile, Claudio Ranieri brings on Mitrovic after their recent penalty woes to take, a bit like a kind of place kicker in the NFL or something, to take the penalty. And what happens?
Sees it saved. You imagine a Boubacar Camara on the bench may have afforded himself a little smile at that. And then Oldham managed to grab a goal. Callum Lang, very well-named player, completing a hat-trick of famous footballing Langs. Can you name the other two?
Adam Lang.
Very good. Hungarian star.
Yeah, the Swiss right-back Michael Lang.
Michael Lang.
Yeah.
So one more, obviously including myself in this, and we can make a five-a-side team.
Brilliant. Okay.
Maybe Nathaniel Mendes Lang could come in on a technicality while we wait for a proper Lang.
All right. So this was a terrific day then for... the Oldham caretaker manager, Peter Wilde, who, as probably you've seen, was actually due to be with the away fans celebrating, but found himself on the touchline guiding the team to a famous victory.
Yeah, it's the kind of story that almost... It's a cliche almost before it's happened, but it's great. And it is the kind of thing that I think reinvigorates interest in the FA Cup. For those who hadn't seen, he'd bought a ticket. He was due to be on the train down with his mates. I think he still owes his mate for the ticket. And it was a good performance from them. And it's good for Oldham because they're a club who always have a large travelling support. You know, 20, 25 years ago, they're in the Premier League. They're a club who have had some kind of relative success in the FA Cup in recent years. They caused Liverpool problems recently. It was just an enjoyable day. And for them, you know, Fulham away is one of the kind of most enjoyable away days for supporters, I think. So that would be a great day out for them.
Mm, he said he'd never been to Craven Cottage. He wanted to go. He's the academy manager by day. And so was free this weekend because they didn't have a game. But Oldham scuppered his plans by... sacking manager Frankie Bunn reportedly by email and getting him to take charge. I think this was actually his third game in charge, but still, wonderful story. Accrington Stanley beat Ipswich 1-0. Daniel, you wrote extensively on some of the world events that have happened since Ipswich last won an FA Cup game.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most interesting in football terms is that three different countries have won the World Cup since Ipswich last won in the FA Cup, which is a good effort. 2010, their last FA Cup win. They have drawn games but gone on to lose replays. That's a shocking record. I think I'm right in saying that Accrington were only 14 places behind Ipswich in the league ladder. And speaking to Ipswich fans, they were kind of the dark, humoured opinion that if they won, it would have been an upset because the team is in such wretched form. They've beaten two Football League teams this season, Ipswich, which is the same as Barnet of the Conference.
So they're in the Football League?
Yes, and they've beaten two Football League teams this season, which is the same number of Barnet who are in non-league. It's not been good, not a good time. Paul Lambert came out after the game, who's their new manager, and said the whole situation's a disgrace. Everything at the club is a disgrace at the moment. They are going down and it doesn't sound like there's an easy fix.
Mm-hmm. Crikey. Well, to cheer yourself up, you went over to Woking's stadium. What's that called?
It's the Lathwaite's Community Stadium, the artist formerly known as Kingfield.
Okay.
It was a proper cup day. It really, really was. It was the sort of day where the home team gets a corner at 0-0 and the whole crowd just rises up as one and does this massive cheer because that's as good as it's going to get. And it was as good as it's going to get. Watford were infinitely better than Woking. They beat them 2-0, but it could have been 4 or 5. Watford just took their foot off the pedal. Right. One interesting thing in the game, it was Adalberto Penaranda's debut for Watford 3 years after joining the club.
Wow.
He'd been kind of part of that Pozzo loan ownership
triangle
system, and then went on loan to Malaga for a season where he got injured, and made his debut yesterday.
What was he like?
He was good. He's dyed his hair white on top, so the home fans and the whole of the home ground was singing, "He's got birds on his head." Which is probably the strangest chant I've heard a whole ground sing as one before. But he was all right.
Right. That's interesting. Did you see Martin Tyler?
He's on the... I saw him before the game, kind of walking around proud as anything around the ground. And then, he was obviously... He sits on the dugout now. We were actually... Some of us were in the overflow section right at the top of the stand, the one main stand, but it's actually at the end of the ground. So I was nowhere near him. But
okay.
I've probably mentioned this before, but he, along with Workings manager Alan Delson, used to be at Kingstonian, my local club. He's surprisingly mouthy towards assistant referees on the touchline, which just in Martin Tyler's voice, hearing certain obscenities at the linesman involving, the position of his flag and stuff,
right,
is just really quite surreal, because obviously you're there, there's no commentary, and your brain kind of tunes into it as if it's commentary, but it's actually, not fit for broadcast. Yeah.
Wow, that would be really disconcerting.
But I feel like I'm painting him in a bad light. I mean, I think it's a really interesting story. This guy who's, been maybe the most prominent commentator in English football for the last 25, 30 years and spends his Saturdays... This is a decent level. This is the National League. But most of his career, he's been at the 7th or 8th tier down in Surrey. He's always been a Woking fan as well. So he's worked his way through Surrey from Kingston to Hampson and Richmond and down to Woking. And a great day for him.
Brilliant.
Do you reckon Tyler drops in and it's live on the bench every game and just really annoys them?
Would psych up the players, I think, in the dressing room.
One other thing on this game that really came through on the TV was how desperate Troy Deeney was to get on the pitch, which was the camera kept cutting to him and he was literally kind of always looking at Javi Gracia to go on, get me on. The Woking centre-back Ben Gehring, obviously having spoken about a possible grudge match beforehand, kicking him into Rose Ed, nice pantomime stuff. And obviously Deeney did score, but the best part of his appearance was when Ken Semmer was down injured. Troy Deeney basically staged an impromptu Q&A with the home fans. They were just shouting questions and he was like, "What are you saying?" And he would answer and they were all laughing. I thought it was really great.
That's brilliant. What was the best question? Could you hear them?
You couldn't. And I imagine that the broadcasters weren't too disappointed that you couldn't hear them, because I'm sure they weren't all related to the technical aspects of being a striker.
I get it.
The thing about the threat to kick him into Rose Ed, of course, was...
They don't have a Rose Ed?
Yeah, the stand only went up to row V.
Right. Didn't think that one through, did he?
T107 for me, if you're interested. That's my seat.
Okay. Were there any questions for Troy about H.G. Wells? Because he's from Woking and War of the Worlds is partly set in Woking.
I see.
There's a very famous song about Woking that you probably don't know is about Woking.
It's The Jam, isn't it?
Well, he was a Woking lad.
It was the original Town Called Malice.
Town Called Malice.
Is that right?
Mm. Which is kind of disappointing, because Woking is not a particularly malicious town. A Town Called Malice, you think it's somewhere really dark and dangerous, but Woking has always been quite pleasant as far as I'm aware.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
More FA Cup, listener. It wasn't an upset, but one man was quite upset in Chelsea's 2-0 victory over Forest. I suppose lots of Forest fans are quite upset, but I was specifically returning to Cesc Fabregas, a topic we will return to later on in the pod. And we'll talk about Forest then as well, and Chelsea, shall we? Daniel, nice. OK, other bits of news. Palace edging past Grimsby, which we mentioned at the top. Another goal from Jordan Ayew there. Bournemouth not so fortunate. They lost 3-1 against Brighton. Man City beat Rotherham 7-0. Spurs, same scoreline for them at Tranmere. Bristol City knocked out Huddersfield. 9 defeats in a row now for Huddersfield. Jason Puncheon made his debut there. Huddersfield with just a single shot on target. Portsmouth, who are on top of League One at the moment, they beat the second place side in the Championship, Norwich, 1-0. Very late, a dramatic win of that one.
Yeah, that was good. It was a weird kickoff time and a long journey, so I'm pleased the supporters had something to cheer.
That's true.
Just to go back to the Crystal Palace game
very
briefly, we got a tweet asking about the refereeing for the Grimsby red card, saying, do they really think a video referee can judge the feel of a game like this?
Right.
It was just the worst tackle of the weekend. And like, who cares what the feel of the game was?
Oh, that was the one on Andros Townsend.
Yeah.
That was horrific. Yeah.
I mean, the only feel that I really care for is whether Andros Townsend still has feeling in his leg.
Right.
And he was
nicely
quite lucky
put.
Too, I think.
It was a difficult weekend for VAR, I felt. We've already discussed the penalty at Fulham, but even more bizarre was the player who was stopped in the Burnley-Barnsley game, Vidra. He was awarded the spot kick, but while running up to take it, the referee blew his whistle again and did the "it's a TV show" symbol.
Well, maybe that should affect how players take penalties. I mean, Pogba shouldn't be doing his 10-second run-up if there's a danger that he could be stopped en route.
Right.
Get a Ritz Adarith on every penalty from yes. now on. Quickly, get it in.
Chris Wood scored a 90th-minute penalty in that game, which gave Burnley the 1-0 win. What's remarkable about that? The fact that he scored a penalty? The fact they were awarded, well, were almost awarded two.
Yes.
The fact that they were awarded a penalty in the first place is 64 Premier League games since the Clarets were last given a spot kick. Obviously, this was in the Cup. But it's just like we were talking about this last week. This is the third longest run in the Premier League, anyway. 63 games. The longest belongs to Wimbledon back in the day. They went 90, I think it was 91 games. It was 90 something, anyway, without getting a penalty.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, Dyche will no doubt think that this is some kind of refereeing conspiracy against Burnley. But different teams play in different ways, and you're not going to get penalties if you lob high balls into the penalty box. If you're Crystal Palace, who get a lot of penalties through Zaha and Townsend, their trickery, you will get penalties. So the fact that it's the longest run since Wimbledon, the most notorious route one side of the Premier League era, I think is quite telling.
Absolutely. Two games that will need replays. Stoke's clash with Shrewsbury after Peter Crouch scored an equaliser and the entire nation went, "What?" I thought he'd retired and started a successful podcast instead.
No, he's still playing. He was also the author of one of the top 10 selling hardback books last year alongside Michelle Obama and Stephen Hawking. So he's in fine company there.
Excellent. Excellent. He's also got another child on the way, Jack.
You know?
Yeah.
I like that.
That's number four.
Our paternal correspondence.
Yeah.
He still lives in Surrey despite training at Stoke, Peter Crouch.
How long has he been at Stoke? Does he go to training?
A long time. 6-7 years?
Yeah.
It takes a lot to get someone out of Surrey, doesn't it, Michael?
Okay. Another game that require a replay is Derby Southampton.
Oh, I enjoyed the highlights of this game, actually.
Good.
Two fantastic moments from Tom Lawrence. The assist for the first, for the volleyed finish. Don't think I've really seen an assist like it. It was a kind of outside of the boot scoop to an on-rushing player that I thought was really good. And the second goal, we cut inside and kind of swerved it away from the goalkeeper into the far corner. Must admit, he's kind of gone off my radar. Tom Lawrence famously made his debut in Ryan Giggs' first game as caretaker Manchester United manager. And then Giggs subbed himself on for Tom Lawrence.
Great performance from Derby, though, coming from behind. So, and they should have won it at the end as well.
Yeah, it would have been a good result for them. But yeah, it was good highlights of that game.
Excellent. Arsenal did beat Blackpool 3-0. You saw the whole of this, Michael. Joe Willock coming in and making a bit of a name for himself.
Yeah, I thought Blackpool gave it a decent go, but Arsenal just had too much, really. And it was nice for Willock because he's a promising player. I'm not sure he's one that's been massively hyped as a real potential first-team regular in the future, but for him to get two goals is a big achievement. His brother Chris is at Benfica. Oh. Moved there last year. I think he's mainly playing for their B team at the moment. But they've also got another brother who is on the books at Manchester United, although I think he's out on loan somewhere in Scotland. But three brothers there.
Indeed.
Mm.
Koscielny injured himself in the warm-up, Michael. Is that serious?
I'm not sure it's serious, but it is the kind of injury you might get, you know, having been out for a long time with an Achilles problem. He's probably played more than Emery would have wanted him to play because of other injuries, so maybe not a huge surprise.
Right. Still bad news for the Gunners. Man United got their fifth straight win under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, beating Reading 2-0 in a game, Jack, that you did not enjoy particularly. Did you enjoy Phil Jones getting red-faced for a different reason for once?
I don't think
that friction burn.
That. Oh,
and he slid
yes.
along the grass on his head.
Yes, classic bit of Phil Jones tomfoolery there. It was a pretty underwhelming game. I thought Reading gave it a good go in the classic cup underdog fashion, but didn't really have much.
Okay.
And United, I mean, Solskjaer made a lot of changes, and that was evident in the way they played. I thought the midfield offered very little. Scott McTominay, I just don't know if he's very good or not. He's just a tall person.
Okay.
And Fred actually, on a couple of occasions, when he has not much time, when he acts quickly, I think he's very good. His distribution of both feet is fairly solid. But the moment when he has time to look up and think about things, it's an old cliche, isn't it, that players come from foreign leagues to the Premier League and are shocked by the speed of the game, how little time they have on the ball. But with him, it's actually really evident. Often he thinks he has 3 or 4 seconds. He's actually got 1 second. And the number of times that he's forced into, you know, a scrambling pass or just dispossessed, even against a second flight team, I thought was quite worrying.
Okay. United are heading off to Dubai for warm weather training ahead of their huge match with Spurs next Sunday. And also, just a quick mention for West Ham beating Birmingham 2-0. Arnautovic scoring again, then getting into a strop with Pellegrini when he was taken off. Andy Carroll came on and scored to make it 2-0, but had a not particularly impressive performance. Is that right? Nasri, I read, also got an hour.
Yeah, the thing I was going to mention from that game, which links to another, is that the 54,000 tickets sold at West Ham. And Goodison Park was a sellout for Everton Lincoln as well. So although the FA Cup is much maligned in terms of, perhaps in terms of bigger clubs' treatment of the early rounds, actually that surprised me hugely, particularly the Goodison sellout. I mean, I'm sure ticket prices were reduced to reflect the appetite for the game, but that doesn't matter. If you're a parent that can take a couple of kids along to see their first game, then that's huge. So yeah, good on both clubs.
Brilliant. Any other conclusions you'd like to make about the third round ahead of the final match this evening?
I enjoyed Gillingham's win over Cardiff, particularly because whenever Gillingham do something impressive, my Gillingham supporting friend mentions the fact he once called them Gillingham.
That's right, there is a Gillingham.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. But this was about 11 years ago and he's still obsessed with it. There was also a great quote from Neil Warnock, who obviously comes up with fantastic excuses every time his side lose. This time around, did he hear his excuse? It was a couple of his players...
The grass was too long, was it?
No, he's not that foolish. But a couple of his players went down injured and he complained that the stretcher took too long to come on and treat them. And he said about one of the players, if he'd had a heart attack, he'd be dead by now. I think they've got a lot to learn.
Well, yeah, but you know... Jack, any final thoughts on the third round? We still, of course, got Chelsea Forest, which we're saving up
yes,
for treats later.
Yes, we can come to that. I'm just looking through my notes.
What are your notes?
I think we've done...
He's got great notes on every game.
Really?
It's a sort of... looks like a BBC Five Live commentator might have for...
Well, the third round isn't my natural habitat, I will say.
Why is that?
Just because there are so many games and I...
32.
I follow the Football League to some extent, but not in a great deal of detail. And occasionally, I admit, some of the mawkishness of the magic of the FA Cup narratives leaves me a bit cold.
I see.
Oh, Dave Smith's a butcher. Will he cut down Ipswich
Surely,
this weekend?
Tree surgeon for that.
I got a couple of interesting stats, I think.
Okay.
Of interest.
Jack, can I just ask, has this morning been useful to you?
Yeah, I've learnt a lot. Yes, it has.
Okay, Michael.
I also enjoyed Barnett's win over Sheffield United for two reasons. One, because it's a non-league side through to the fourth round. I don't think we had any non-league sides in the third round last year, which was very unusual, so that's nice. And in terms of the odds, it was the biggest FA Cup shock since 2010, which was when Leeds overcame Manchester United. So even though it's not one of the, you know, the big boys, the Premier League sides going out, it was, you know, very improbable and a very impressive victory for them.
Excellent.
And just one more thing, if I may, just on the subject of changes, you know, there were some sides that made 9, 10, 11 changes. There are only three sides in the competition who named an unchanged side.
Ooh.
One of them was Oldham.
Right.
Shock. One of them was Barnet.
Yep.
Shock. And the other was Doncaster, who won away at Preston, who are in the league above them. So it does go to show that if you, you know, play your first 11, good things can happen.
You got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them.
Yes, very nice.
I was just going to make a quick point on Leeds United, who lost QPR, their third defeat in a row. And when Martin Bielsa came in and we he's achieved above expectation this season, I think that's fair to say, but the doubts would always remain how the squad, a small squad, could cope without investment with this kind of high intensity with and without the ball football. And yeah, they're starting to concede. They have got a bit of an injury crisis at the back, but they are starting to concede a lot of goals. And yeah, as I say, they've lost three in a row. And Bielsa's kind of saying, it's fine, don't worry about it. We deserve to win the games we lost. But they came from behind, but even before that, they had to come from behind to beat Villa and Blackburn in ways that you cannot keep doing.
It started.
So it's just, I'm not saying they're imploding, but it's certainly starting to turn a little bit, I think.
Mm, I'd also like to give a high five to Rafael Benitez.
Okay.
Visibly crestfallen that Newcastle scored a late equaliser against Blackburn.
Of course, that goes to a replay as well.
Yes. I mean, it's one thing to be annoyed about having to play cup games, but I think most managers would at least put a brave face on it and say, oh, you know, well done, lads. Couldn't even muster 5% happiness. It was excellent.
By the way, what a nonsense it is that they've scrapped replays for the fifth round at this stage in the competition. I know they were going to bring it in for next year.
Yeah.
But how can you do that based upon the fact that there's a few teams still in Europe? I thought that was an incredible reason to completely change the rules of a competition.
Absolutely.
To the detriment of the lower league teams.
Well, I think that's the thing. And once again, it's the hypocrisy of banging on, Jack, about the magic and inviting everyone to respect the tradition of the FA Cup and not mug off the competition, in the words of one slogan, while you dick around with it. Oops, just gone all Martin Tyler there for a second. Sorry. Anyway, with that, let's leave the FA Cup for the moment and talk about some other things after this.
People of the Totally Football Shows, you know what you could be listening to right here? You, your company, your product, out here in front of hundreds and thousands of listeners who are mostly men between the ages of 25 and 44. As well as the twice-weekly Totally Football Show, we've got a network of other football shows. There's Galazzo for the discerning cosmopolitan listener. There's the Totally Football League Show for the loyal, hardy listener. And there's the Totally Scottish Football Show for your listener who likes those big square sausages. And we've got even more podcasts on the way in 2019. Some of them not even based around football or indeed sport. To discuss advertising on one of the Totally Football shows or across the Muddy Knees Media Network, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. We reach well over a million pairs of ears each week, and now you can too. Email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.
Transfers. Jack, are you excited about transfers?
Broadly, no.
Oh, really? Don't you like it when the, you know, the deck gets shuffled?
Well, having worked for a tabloid newspaper for 3 years...
Did you?
Transfer news...
It's... Yeah.
I'm better off out.
But let's... things that have actually happened. For example, Nathaniel Clyne snubbing Cardiff to join Bournemouth.
Obviously, Mike has already paid tribute to Neil Warnock's moaning, but there was an excellent moan after the game where he accused Liverpool and Clyne himself of being classless at not letting him know. And then Clyne then... almost immediately comes out and explains why he moved and said, oh, it's all about the manager. I just wanted to play for Eddie Howe.
Ooh.
Which is wonderful work from Clyne.
Right,
perhaps inadvertent, but majestic all the same.
Warnock's point was that he had previously been promised, that was his impression at least, by Liverpool that Clyne would be joining the Bluebirds on loan. Bournemouth, of course, beaten again this weekend, also signed Dominic Solanke for £19 million. Which is it a lot of money or a reasonable amount? Jack, in tabloid terms, is this a shocker or a sweet deal for Bournemouth?
I think you can see it either way. I think it's funny how that kind of fee, 17, 18, 19 million pounds, has become the new, you know, 5 million back in the day. And a player like Solanke, I think Liverpool probably bought him without perhaps even thinking that he would become a starting player and knowing that the amount of money they had to pay for him would probably, they would get that back no matter what happened. So the fact that not much has happened in the intervening time.
So he's had 21 appearances and scored one goal. Does anybody actually know if he's any good? Presumably Bournemouth think he is.
I think he's got talent. I mean, I'd be reluctant if I was Bournemouth to pay such a large amount of money for a player who isn't used to regular football. In a way, I think it's a little bit similar to when Chelsea brought Morata, who's obviously a higher class of player, or they signed a higher class of player. But this was a guy who'd been used to being a super sub for the last 4 or 5 years. And it's turned out that actually after about 6 months of regular football, he looked absolutely knackered. So I think he's talented. They'll probably rotate him because they've got some other good forwards. He won't be playing every week.
Right.
But, yeah, interesting.
This isn't per se an indication that Callum Wilson's definitely on his way.
Well, I dare say it's almost preemptive replacement, you know, which is supposedly how the good selling clubs do things these days.
Oh, right.
They
okay.
get the players in, and then if someone leaves, you've already got someone who's known the club for 5 or 6 months. But I'm not sure Wilson will be leaving this January.
Okay. Tammy Abraham is apparently back on with his move on loan to Wolves. Villa, his current club, were knocked out by Tammy's previous side, Swansea 3-0 in the FA Cup. You're right, Jack, there's a lot of games, aren't there?
a lot of games.
Villa are in some trouble at the moment. They've signed, or they will sign over the next couple of days, Courtney Hawes on loan, who was interesting West Brom as well, from Wolves. But they've conceded something like 17 goals in 6 games, Villa. They conceded 5 to Forest, and they drew 5 all at home. 2 goals at least in the last 6 games. They've got a real issue now.
Oh, Godin is going to be joining Inter on a free at the end of the season. He's 32, you know. He looks twice that.
Yeah, he seems like a mid-30s player to me.
Well, you know, he's not far off it.
That is a fair point, yeah.
But they're going to have an exciting back line. I mean, for as long as he's fit, they've got some excellent players, De Vrij, Vasalico, and...
Is Miranda still there at Inter?
Yes, for the moment, although I'm not sure how long... He'll be staying. Godin's current side, Atletico Madrid, drew 1-1 with Sevilla this weekend because the Liga are back. They, of course, the team second and third behind Barcelona. But the big news there was the big two, if we can use that expression. Barcelona beating Getafe and the laws of physics with that messy pass. Which ultimately came to nothing, but he also scored, and a victory for them to climb 5 points clear of Atletico Madrid, who, as I say, dropped 2 points with Sevilla. Real Madrid, meanwhile, lost at home to Real Sociedad.
They did. Very soundly beaten as well. Sociedad could have scored a third late on. What I liked about this one was it's the first time Real Sociedad have won at the Bernabeu since 2004.
Wow.
And who was playing for Real Madrid that day?
Was it Santiago Solari?
Santiago Solari.
That's good, isn't it? We're halfway through the Liga season now. Real Madrid are outside the Champions League places. I mean, I know it's unlikely, but imagine if they were to miss out on the Champions League.
It does slightly suggest that Jose Mourinho's luck might well be in. There were the first sort of murmurs of, well, not murmurs, but calls of discontent from the crowd against Florentino Perez yesterday. And I think Solari's time is probably coming to an end. He's kind of had that little boost and he's probably served his purpose. So, incredibly, Mourinho could well be about to fail upwards once again.
Beautifully put. Do you think that would happen before the end of the season even?
Well, if they're outside the Champions League spots, then their summer business is going to be affected if they're not in that competition. So I would think they would do anything to do it.
Because he did such a great job of taking Man United into the Champions
League
position.
Indeed, indeed. Mm. There are reasons, with Sergio Ramos possibly leaving this summer, there are reasons to think that he might do okay there, but it does seem incredibly unimaginative.
Right, okay. Excellent. We'll keep across that. In the meantime, let's have a chat about some exciting fixtures coming up midweek. It's the League Cup semi-finals.
So that result was their 8th 0-0 in a row, and we've even had reports of fans falling asleep in their seats. Stuart is at the game, joins us now on the line. Stuart?
Sounds like Stuart needed Paddy Power, because with our new Same Game Multi, you can combine multiple bets from the same game, so everything is exciting. Plus, you'll get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your fourfold Same Game Multi lets you down. Paddy Power, enough of the nonsense.
Applies to pre-match fourfold plus Same Game Multi bets. First qualifying bet only, max free bet £10 per customer per day. Excludes shop bets, T's and C's apply, 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
It's the League Cup semi-finals this midweek. Wednesday season unfancied visitor turning up at the Etihad. No, I'm not referring to you, Daniel, although you will be there. Yeah. But Burton Albion.
Yeah, I suspect City, one of the standout things of this weekend, I thought, was that the strength of the team that Pep Guardiola picked. He did have a couple of youngsters in there, but Raheem Sterling started, Riyad Mahrez, Gabriel Jesus, Ilkay Gundogan, and I think he'll probably... Yeah, Kevin De Bruyne, although... probably more because he's coming kind of get fitness than necessarily would have played. But I think he'll probably do the same. The last thing he'll want to do is go to to Burton with the tie still in the balance. So I think he'll probably switch maybe Sterling for Sané and maybe Mahrez for Bernardo, and just trying to change two or three key players, but basically pick the same team and look to get it done at home. And yeah, as you say, they scored seven against Rotherham without really even trying.
Mm. What made you pick that game to attend? Is there a story that you think might...
I'm second in command at the outlet that I'm working for.
Oh,
and
I see.
Someone else chose Tottenham Chelsea.
Did they know? All right, well, there's much that is alluring about the clash at Wembley. Spurs coming off that 7-0 win at Tranmere. Chelsea, meanwhile, beating Forest. The two teams met 6 weeks ago in the league at Wembley, and it was a resounding win for Tottenham, 3-1. Do you remember that, Michael?
I do.
Any lessons we can draw from that to kind of guide us in this upcoming clash on Tuesday?
Well, Tottenham were very good there. It was a very high-tempo, high-intensity performance. Whether they can replicate that after the Christmas schedule, I'm doubtful about that. But it should be a good game. I mean, proper fierce rivals, these. You know, I think maybe people don't always appreciate the fact that while it's not the geographically closest two teams in London, it is a proper rivalry. There's been some good cup ties between them over the years. I remember a League Cup semi-final about 2001, maybe, where Spurs won 5-1 against Chelsea. Mm. And that was particularly notable for Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank getting sent off for slapping someone, even though it wasn't actually him. It was Mario Melchiot kind of went in behind him and, you know, did a little bit of a trick like that. I'm looking forward to this game. I think I quite like the League Cup semi-finals just because it's two-legged and it brings something different to the, you know, it's a different feel to the FA Cup. So people are very down on having two cup competitions in England, but I think it's really enjoyable.
Heung-min Son still available. This is kind of penultimate appearance potentially before he heads off to the Asian Cup. He's got 7 goals and 5 assists in his last 6 games.
It's also even more impressive if you take out the games he hasn't started. If it's just starts, I think it's 12 and 13.
Wow. And also in a rich vein of form is Fernando Llorente, who got a hat trick against mighty Tranmere Rovers, so he'll be pushing for inclusion in this League Cup starting 11.
I think that might be a valedictory
trick. Really?
Well, I think there's talk of him returning to Athletic Club in Spain.
Oh, right, okay. Meanwhile, it almost certainly was a valedictory appearance for Cesc Fabregas in Chelsea's win at the weekend, 2-0 over Forest. A game that was marked by a brace for Morata, and yet a lot of people weren't particularly impressed with his performance.
It was almost that he wasn't impressed by his own goals. Normally, at least you'd think in the form he's been in, that a couple of goals would be a cause of celebration, but he continued to look sulky, and I'm pretty certain that he went straight down the tunnel when he was substituted as well. He just looks broken, basically. I mean, when he came to England, there was talk of he's incredibly superstitious and he's incredibly a constantly worried man. He's not particularly confident, and it looks like this spell of form has just kind of broken him. I think he probably needs a move back to Italy or Spain. But as Michael said, he's never been a leading man, and for the price that Chelsea paid and will want to receive for him, he's going to have to be that leading guy, because, you know, he's going to cost at least 30 million if someone wants him on a permanent deal.
Mm. Callum Hudson-Odoi, also priced currently at £30 million. If he played for Borussia Dortmund, how much would Chelsea pay for him, do you think?
Yeah, it's a funny situation, isn't it, really, with the Pulisic coming in and, you know, almost German sides taking raw products and just seeing the potential in them that Man City and Chelsea don't.
Right.
It's a bit of a sad situation, but it was good to see him getting a run out. And, I mean, Chelsea got injury problems up front at the moment, or in wide positions, I should say, and up front, which means Hazard might be used there. So I wouldn't be surprised if Hudson-Odoi started against Tottenham, which would be nice.
Rafael Honigstein making the point that Chelsea are not forcing Hudson-Odoi out. He says they'd love to keep him. Bayern, though, have made him a huge offer, and he's out of contract soon and thus can basically do whatever he wants. When's his contract up, Daniel?
Summer 2020.
Right, which already gives him a significant bargaining leverage.
Yes, and seriously, good on him, because I think we underestimate, with someone like Jadon Sancho, at the age of 17, 18, moving abroad is not a typically British thing to do, to have that, you know, courage to go abroad. To do that at 18, when Sancho, for example, had an offer of £30,000 a week from Manchester City to stay. So it was not as if he was twiddling his thumbs with nothing else to do. good on him. And if Hudson-Odoi does the same, good on him. It will be a lot harder to break in at Bayern than it will at Dortmund, though.
Mm. Speaking of young players, young midfield stars going to a foreign league, making a name for themselves, Cesc Fabregas, his journey in a foreign land coming to a close, leaving the field with a tear in his eye. And I think misty-eyed with the thousands at Stamford Bridge to see him go as well. How important has he been? 15 years, Michael, in the Premier League. How important has he been?
Yeah, I mean, a really good player for two different clubs. I think we sometimes forget how quickly he had an impact when breaking into the first team. He was so good at such a young age that it basically convinced Wenger to sell Patrick Vieira, who'd been, you know, one of the best players in English football.
Do you remember when Vieira came back with Juventus? And it was kind of like master and apprentice, and Fabregas just destroyed him.
He was fantastic, yeah. I mean, it's been a funny career. He was outstanding at Arsenal, but didn't really win anything. His spell with Barcelona was strange because it was always, you know, cast as a big homecoming, but it didn't work out that well in the end. And he kind of came back to England slightly with his tail between his legs. I mean, he was up for going back to Arsenal. Wenger decided he didn't want him back at that stage, so went to Chelsea. And I quite liked him under Conte because he had this weird thing where Conte didn't, I mean, he wasn't convinced by Fabregas's positional discipline, I think for good reasons. But Fabregas came on as a sub and he just kept creating so many goals that he basically made himself undroppable. And he's been a great player to watch. I think his contribution to Spain's treble success is often overlooked. He wasn't part of the core group with Xavi and Iniesta, but forced his way into the side for two of the finals in 2008 and 2012, and also set up the winning goal in the World Cup final of 2010. It's a strange move, I think. You know, I know Henry's at Monaco, but I wouldn't be too sure that Henry will be there come the summer or into next season. Monaco are second bottom in the league. They've improved a little bit, but there's a good chance that next year he'll be playing in the second division in France under a manager he might not have heard of. So
right,
for a top player, I think it's very odd.
Monaco also potentially going to be changing ownership. Is that right? There's been suggestions that Prince Albert might be coming back in. That's what was discussed on a podcast I was listening to.
Prince Albert coming back in, enough to make your eyes water.
That and other lines were explored at the time. Sorry, Jack.
That's a good point Michael makes about the assists under Conte at Chelsea. He had that, obviously, that understanding with Diego Costa.
For the first half of the season, yeah.
Obviously, that was in Mourinho's last season as well, I think. And that, you wonder whether those two had some kind of Faustian pact going, and that they've, neither of them has really been the same since. Fabregas needed Costa making those runs on the last shoulder. Morata doesn't really do that in the same way. Costa, I think, hasn't done as well without someone looking for that ball all the time. And yeah, both of them have faded at a similar time. It's quite funny.
Cesc Fabregas scored more than 50 goals, provided more than 100 assists, and to repeat her at Fergie. So a colourful career in the English game, and best of luck in Monaco. Daniel, Forest, meanwhile, beaten 2-0 here. Mm-hmm. What happened there?
Chelsea are better than us.
Right.
Considerably better than us. They're a Premier League team and we are a bit of a mess.
Okay. Where are you, seventh at the moment?
Yeah, at some point, Aitor Karanka is going to get the chop. Forest is basically prolonging his own stay of execution by winning unexpected games, beat Leeds at home, for example. So, but at some point, he will go. And from what I hear, the club would like to talk to Slavisa Jokanovic. Which makes some sense, although it would mean that 2019 joined every other year back to 2010 as years where Forest have sacked a manager. So, I mean, that kind of short-termism is just kind of nonsense, really. But, yeah.
I see. Well, that's some of the football on the way. Very shortly, we'll hear about some matches that are taking place a long, long way away. The Asian Cup. Also, Michael's going to do us a book recommendation. First, though, let's get the odds on things from producer Ben and Paddy Power.
Thank you, Jimbo. It's time to talk to Lee Price from Paddy Power. Lee, how are you? How's the FA Cup for you?
I'm very well, probably better than the FA Cup was for me, but how are you?
Yes, I'm treble good, thank you. Very, very good indeed. Let's talk about the FA Cup briefly. Unfortunately, we can't talk about what's going on in the fourth round just yet because the draw hasn't been made as we talk here. But tell us anyway, the overall favourites for the Cup.
Yeah, obviously subject to massive change if two of the big boys draw each other. Pretty much as you'd expect, Man City the clear favourite, 7-2. Chelsea and Tottenham United next in the betting. Liverpool fourth in the betting because they haven't played yet. Weirdly ahead of Arsenal, though. It's a bit of a snub to the Gunners. Not sure what we mean there. They're 9-1 to win the Cup again.
Well, there's more Cup action this week, of course. Let's talk about Spurs and Chelsea in the Carabao Cup. What's going to happen there?
Well, Tottenham have liked Tuesdays recently. They smashed Cardiff last Tuesday, and before that there was the Barcelona miracle. And we think they might like this Tuesday too. They're favourites to beat Chelsea at evens. Chelsea are 5-2. And you fancy a red card, this is a famously naughty fixture. That's just 3-1 here, around half the odds you'd normally get.
Lovely. And Burton Albion are at Man City in the other semi-final. They're probably not going to win it, but can they score?
Well, they can, actually. The odds are 7-4 that they score at least one goal, which isn't too bad. But the equivalent market for City is a massive 1-100 to score one goal. And their odds on to score at least 3 goals in the first leg, and even money to score 4 or more. If you fancy repeat the 7-0 scoreline they dished out on Rotherham, that's 25-1, almost twice as likely as Burton winning the first leg. Sorry, Burton fans.
You can find out those odds and more at paddypower.com. All prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. Daniel, you're back on Thursday.
I am, yes.
All right. You'll be joined by, it says here, Tom Williams and James Horncastle, assuming he can still walk after all his happy... What was it? His me time this weekend.
God. The mind boggles, James.
Yeah.
Can I give a quick shout out to India and their Asian Cup achievements before we go?
Oh, the Asian Cup?
Yeah.
Okay, what's happened?
Well, India beat Thailand 4-1, which was their first win in the Asian Cup since 1964. And for those of you who know your Asian Cup history, the 1964 tournament didn't really make sense because about 13 of the 16 sides withdrew. So it wasn't much of a tournament. But kind of British interest in this because their manager, Stephen Constantine, is a Londoner. Mm-hmm. He's had an incredible globe-trotting career.
Cabbies, all that.
Okay. Sorry, just going to say. The manager, Stephen Constantine, is a Londoner. And whilst we're chatting about this, I very much recommend his book, which came out last year. It's the best football book I've read in the past couple of years. It's called From Delhi to the Den. Because he was briefly at Millwall, and he's had this incredible globe-trotting career that has taken in 2 spells at India. He's been in charge of Sudan, Malawi, Rwanda, and there's some incredible tales in it. Just the kind of logistics of playing an away qualifier in North Korea and stories like this, I think, absolutely fantastic. So brilliant. Worth keeping an eye on in the Asian Cup.
Excellent. All right, so that's From Delhi to the Den.
Yes.
Excellent. What else has happened in the Asian Cup then?
Well, the interesting thing about that game, it was India 4, Thailand 1, was Thailand sacked their manager after that game. Manager was Milovan Rajevac, who you may or may not remember from taking charge of Ghana run to the quarterfinals in 2010.
Right.
But that's been, I would say, the biggest story so far.
Okay. It's in the group stages at the moment.
We're still halfway through the first round, but it's... it's an interesting tournament. I mean, the managerial lineup is quite incredible. I don't know if you've covered this already.
No, no.
But you've got the likes of Alberto Zaccheroni,
who
you'll remember very fondly.
Is he with Japan still?
No, he's now with the UAE.
I see.
Interesting move. Marcelo Lippi is in charge of China.
Right.
Palo Bento, South Korea. Carlos Queiroz is still in charge of Iran. Sven, of course, is still there with the Philippines.
He's only just joined them.
He's only just joined them.
But in Sven years, that's quite a long time.
Yeah. And Hector Cooper is in charge of Uzbekistan. So the managerial lineup is maybe more exciting than the player lineup.
Brilliant.
The player line, it's funny, isn't it? Because there's players like Heung-min Son who have basically been given leave of absence for the first 2 group games because I think they play Kyrgyzstan and the Philippines.
Okay.
So they kind of there's a few players who are not actually going until the second fortnight of the tournament, basically. But yeah, it's a much improved tournament. It is a really, really good watch, not just saying that.
I mean, it's now gone up to 24 teams, which I always think is a little bit... It ruins the group stage structure slightly, but once you get into the quarterfinals, the semi-finals, I mean, Japan, Australia, Korea over the last 10 years have been seriously good teams.
All right.
Australia also lost to Jordan on the opening day, the holders, Australia.
Daniel, perhaps you'll do us a proper Asian Cup review roundup for Thursday.
I'll make it my homework.
Fantastic. Well, I'm sure you'll bring that and so much more to Thursday's appointment with Tom Williams and James Horncastle. For now, that's it for this Totally Football Show. So many thanks, Daniel, Jack and Michael, and you, listener. Do join us again on Thursday. Hope you have a great time in the meanwhile.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And don't forget to check out our other football podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and everywhere else you get your audio on demand.
Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really. And here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK. So that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5pm till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.